Welcome to a bonus episode of Imagine Tomorrow. If you haven't already, you should head over to episode 4, where we imagine what a post-antibiotic future would look like for India. One that's full of superbugs that are super hard to kill. We had Dr. Jyoti Joshi and Dr. Prashant Srinivas tell us what it would take to solve complex social problems that are at the core of antibiotic resistance in our country. And we had Dr. Anand Anandkumar, the head of Bugworks, a company in Bangalore that's developing a new class of antibiotics, tell us what it would take for us to avoid a post-antibiotic future. This bonus episode follows from those conversations, so again, do listen to episode 4 before you continue. Well, it's clear that antibiotic resistance is not just a problem for India or a problem for the US. It's a problem of many countries and many bugs. So I thought it would be nice to hear from someone who has a bird's eye view of the problem. Dr. Hanan Balki of the World Health Organization.
So I'm a pediatrician by training for the past 25 years or so, and I'm also subspecialized in two major areas, infectious diseases, and my whole career and research was also focusing on infection prevention and control, specifically at the healthcare setting. And one of the things that I was exposed to because of my subspecialty is the problem with finding the right antibiotic to treat your patient with when you have a culture result that shows that this specific pathogen is resistant to many options. Number two, because of my infection prevention and control background, it also exposed me to the many gaps that exist in the area of hygiene within the healthcare setting. Things that are not usually obvious to the bare eye. We're talking about sterilization of equipment, areas within the laundry, within the food processing, within breast pumping areas or milk pumping areas for neonatal areas. So there's many housekeeping issues that are not obvious to the visible eye that can lead to spread and further enhancement of antimicrobial resistance. So I became very passionate about this topic, and now I'm actually leading the division of antimicrobial resistance from Geneva at the World Health Organization.
The first time I dove deep into the subject of antibiotic resistance was through a book by science journalist Merin McKenna. It's called Superbug, The Fatal Menace of MRSA. And I was scared and captivated, and my mind was frankly blown. Many people have written about antibiotic resistance in India too, and one series of articles that really laid it bare for me was by science journalist Priyanka Pulla. I've linked to both the book and the articles in the show notes. And personally, I've seen how the urinary tract infections I keep getting have developed resistance to different antibiotics over the years. And again, it's scary. So I asked Dr. Balki what she thinks would be the worst case scenario if things remained as they are today.
I think we are in somewhat of a bad case scenario already. I think people who say that we will be facing a pandemic in the future are a bit too optimistic. I think we are already in a multi-drug resistant pandemic or an AMR pandemic. However, what we refer to it as the silent tsunami because it's a very complex health problem, unlike, for example, Ebola or COVID-19, as you see now, or influenza, because you're talking about a resistance mechanism, a phenomena, if you will, a phenomena of resistance that is emerging in many different bacterial, fungal, and also parasitic and viral species of pathogens. So it's not one disease, it's a phenomena that can become problematic in many bacteria, especially if you're a healthcare provider at the bedside. So the worst case scenario is that we go to a pre-antibiotic era. And first of all, you lose decades of advanced medicine, of transplants and hip replacements and good quality of life, to an area where a simple skin wound or cut or a simple surgery can lead to devastating morbidity, if not death. There are many stories of patients getting a simple wound infection, especially if their immune system is quite low, if they're a diabetic, if they're post-operative. And then we physicians are not able to actually see any hope by finding the appropriate antimicrobial agent. So in many parts of the world, that is already taking place.
Although antimicrobial resistance is a story that's unfolding in many parts of the world, India is key to the story.
Putting India within the global context is extremely important. And as you clearly mentioned, antimicrobial resistance is a problem of high, mid, and low income countries because antimicrobial usage exists for all of these areas. But the problem with some of the misunderstanding is that it's a pure human problem, which in fact, it's a very much a multi-sectoral problem. The antimicrobials produced, as a rough estimate, 70% of all produced antimicrobial agents are in fact used in agriculture, not in the human sector. But because humans are mingling more among each other, whether in the community or in the healthcare system, and the misuse and the emergence of antimicrobial resistance in the healthcare setting or in the community, the easy transferability of these resistant genes between humans or between bacteria carried by humans is of extreme relevance. But we need to be extremely cognizant about the transmission of resistance mechanisms and resistant bacteria from water, environment, and agriculture into the humans. Now, India itself as a large country is a very complex situation because it's a country that is highly populated. It's a country that has a high impact on agriculture, on manufacturing, on the pharmaceutical industry. So all of those make India extremely crucial in the solution for antimicrobial resistance, whether in India itself or for the globe.
As we discussed in episode 4, the problem of antibiotic resistance in countries like India is a problem of both a lack of access to antibiotics and antibiotic misuse and abuse.
So some patients die of infections because they can't have access to antimicrobial agents. And by giving more access, there's even more need for us to put in place the elements that will allow for the proper use of antibiotics. So we need to be very careful with the language we're using. We don't want to restrict antibiotics. We don't want to deny those who need it for survival and good well-being not to access it, but we want humans and animals to have access to effective, affordable antimicrobials when they actually need it.
To help countries optimize their use of antibiotics, WHO has come up with what it calls the AWARE tool. It classifies antibiotics into three groups: access, watch, and reserve. Basically, it groups these antibiotics into ones that should be readily available for common illnesses and others that should be kept under strict watch and reserved as the last resort option.
So the AWARE classifies them into access, which is the first line therapeutics for most of the common clinical syndromes requiring antibacterial or antimicrobial therapy. And watch is the second line, and the reserve are really the third or the last line antimicrobials, which are really usually needed in the ICU setting or for patients with very significant disease. So if we are able to guide member states and countries that you do need to make available to the healthcare providers these antimicrobials, which are the access antimicrobial agents, then at least patients with the most common diseases will be able to be treated. And you also take away that need or urge of healthcare providers in using the stronger antibiotics for the simple infections. So I think it serves the issue of access to first line therapies. It also allows the member states to use this as maybe not the sole tool, but as an initial tool to then customize their antimicrobial guidance within the specific state, for example, like in India, because you have a state system, and then going down to districts or healthcare systems where they need to base their antimicrobial guidance based on the output from the microbiology laboratory and what is common in that specific community and what is purchased in that specific healthcare system.
Sometimes what antibiotic gets prescribed is a dance of what is available more easily. Take, for example, sore throat in children.
For example, group A strep is one of the most common pathogens to cause a sore throat. And again, the sequela of not treating it appropriately can cause very devastating disease, rheumatic fever, for example, a cardiac problem. So group A strep is a pathogen that, when it causes pharyngitis in young children, is very much in need of being treated. Now, this pathogen specifically is quite unique in that it has not developed resistance to penicillin. Penicillin is a very, very simple, narrow-spectrum antimicrobial agent. Yet, because penicillin is cheap, it is not available everywhere. So what happens with cases of sore throat? The majority get second or third generation cephalosporins to treat a simple, suspected case of group A strep.
I found this quite interesting. Very few companies manufacture the active ingredient for penicillin today, mainly because it offers very little profit. According to a 2017 scoping report on antimicrobial resistance in India, only one formulation company in India is making penicillin, whereas 135 formulation companies manufacture cefixime, which is a third generation broad-spectrum cephalosporin. There's another thing that WHO has been doing. It's come up with a list of 12 major groups of priority pathogens or bacteria that threaten human lives the most.
Because these are the pathogens most likely to infect hospitalized patients, and these are the pathogens that have high trends of resistance around the globe. For example, Acinetobacter, E. coli, Klebsiella pneumonia. The priority pathogen list is extremely important because it really identifies the very critical bacteria that are causing the burden of disease within the human health sector. And it has many benefits. One of the biggest benefits is that it can also guide the research and development community on developing new antimicrobial agents specifically for these pathogens that have the potential of being highly resistant, but also highly prevalent in the healthcare setting and among patients in the intensive care, and also for the research and development of diagnostics to help the healthcare providers in better diagnosing these pathogens, but also the resistance that some of these pathogens can carry de novo within their patients, even while being under therapy if they were susceptible at the very beginning. So even within a specific patient, resistance can develop in front of the healthcare providers while on treatment within the healthcare setting. So having tools available is extremely important. And maybe sometimes it's not seen very much as AMR related, but I think vaccine development is very much one of the core pillars of the response to antimicrobial resistance. So I think vaccine development, especially for the pediatric age group, but more needed also for the adult age group, is something extremely important. But I think innovations in managing hygiene, whether in the animal health or the human health sector, water sanitation innovations would be very important. And I think India is investing a lot in those areas.
That's it for this bonus episode. You can find links to the articles and books I mentioned and transcripts and everything else about the episode in the show notes and on the website imaginedtomorrow.com. I hope you have a good week ahead. Next time, we'll take on a completely different journey.